Hi, y'all. My name's Sarah. I'm an addict.
My name's Sarah.
I am an addict. They just asked me. I was going downstairs, getting a cup of coffee, doing a little bit of service work, and I said hi to somebody at the program table, and they said, "Will y'all lead this meeting? Will you lead this meeting for me?" And I said, "Okay. What is it? And I'll do it." So I'm here, and they told me mistaking my will for God's will, and I thought, this is a good topic for me. This is an excellent topic for me because this is something that happens all the time for me because I a lot of times think that my will is God's will. I've been clean for a while now. I got clean August 28th of 1983. So a lot of times I think, I got 17 plus years. I'm good. I know what's happening, I got kids. I'm a mom. I'm a wife. Everything's, I know what's happening. As a matter of fact, I've been sharing in meetings lately that I have a problem with normalcy. And I'm not even realizing that that's just, that's a lot of ego and a lot of self-centeredness. And reality is I'm sick and I'm going to be sick for a long time, I wouldn't be saying that stuff if I wasn't sick, I'm not going to tell y'all a whole lot about my addiction. I'm going to assume y'all know how to use, that you've been there, and that's why you're here. If you need any more instructions, I'm sure there's a man on the street or a lady down the road who can tell you all about what the disease of addiction is. I don't want to go there today. I'm very fortunate to have what I have and to have been clean and in recovery for the time that I have, and I am truly grateful for that. And it is when I have an attitude of gratitude, I'm able to maintain that reality that it's all about being grateful to the God of my understanding, and practicing the acceptance that this is God's will and not my will, that things go okay. And I think for me, the biggest deal with knowing what the difference is between my will and God's will is how my day is going. I was just in a meeting and Ben was talking about it, and it makes so much sense. We wake up every day and we're given the opportunity with a new day. And sometimes I wake up and I'm not happy, I'm not known to be the kind of person that's a morning person. I'll stay up all night and play spades on the computer. And I get up in the morning sometimes just because my babies woke me up. Mommy, it's time to go to school. Okay, all right. So when people wake me up in the morning, I'm not always happy, So it takes a lot of effort sometimes to take a moment and realize that it's not about me. It's about doing the next right thing. What is the next right thing when I first get up in the morning? Well, hopefully it's a prayer, but sometimes it ain't always a prayer. Sometimes it's just going to the bathroom, washing my face, and changing a diaper. but that is the next right thing. Because when I was using, it was using. I didn't even get up. I just rolled over and got high. So today, that's how I know, I'm doing the next right thing. And as the day goes along, when I start feeling hurried and rushed and my shoulders get tense, and I know it's really bad because I get this pain in my back and it feels like I hurt my shoulder, but actually I didn't hurt my shoulder. It's just a deep pain from stress. And that means I haven't taken the time to realize that I am trying to force my will into God's world. It's very hard sometimes because I think I'm doing the right thing. I'm a service junkie. I do a lot of service. And here at this convention, I'm a member of the board of directors. And last year, I was the treasurer for the convention. And this year, they've done things a little different than they did last year. And I have a hard time with that. And I had to accept. I had to realize I had to step back. And I had to accept that this is not my show this year. This is somebody else's show, and realize that this is the way God wanted their show to be, And it's not my job to go and impose, And even though I'm saying this is a suggestion and I'm just trying to help, that's my will. I just think I'm trying to help. But what I'm doing is I'm interfering. I'm putting my will in the way of God's will. I am just supposed to be here to be of service to God and others. I believe that for me, that what I've learned by working the 12 steps and applying the 12 steps and the 12 traditions in my life, that my ultimate goal here on earth is to be of service to God and others. Now, I get confused. Like I said, I'm a service junkie. I do service here. I also have another, I do Girl Scouts. And I always think, you know, I've got to be in charge. I got to control everything because I'm good at this. You know, I know what's going on. I can take care of it and I can handle it. And then once again, sometimes I get confused about forcing what I think is right versus just the way it's supposed to be, just the way God wants it to be. And a lot of times for me, it gets hard to distinguish, you know, when is it God's will? When is it my will? And like I said before, I usually know by how tense I am and how tense the people are around me. You know, if I'm getting through my day, and everybody has a different day, but my day goes, I wake up in the morning, I got to get my daughter ready for school, I got to feed my son, got to feed my daughter, you know, feed myself. I have a lot of animals and stuff to take care of. But when things get hectic, when people start fighting and people start arguing and I start screaming, God's will is not happening. This is no longer God's will, even though I think I'm doing what I'm supposed to be doing, you know. And I guess, I don't know, I hope I'm going in order and I'm making sense. But one thing that I do a lot for myself, and I do it a lot when I lead meetings, and it really helps me get into perspective. It's another key that I've used in my recovery, is realizing that it's about the here and the now. So when I have those moments, and like I'm out there in the hallway, and I'm like helping this person, helping that person, Sarah, I need you down here at this register to fix this, I just got to take a moment and realize all I have is right now. You know, right now we're in a meeting, and a lot of people in here, you know, and we're clean and we're in Ocean City and it's good. You know? It's no big deal right now. It's all right. And when I do that, it puts it all in perspective. You know what I mean? I'm not using. I don't have any money problems right this second. You know what I mean? I'm just here. And something about using that tool for myself, being able to live right in the moment, I guess for me is a miracle. Something I've been given through applying the 12 steps and the 12 traditions. And I guess that's what I want to do for a couple minutes is talk about the steps and traditions. Because that is when that's how I learned about God and my will. Because when I came here, all I knew was that people told me I was powerless. Basically, all I knew was that I was told, don't use again or you'd be a vegetable. So I didn't want to use again because, like I said, I'm a control freak. Control freak didn't want to lose her power to think. So I stopped using. And then I had to admit and accept that I was an addict. And that was very hard. I was 17 when I got clean. And the thought of not using for the rest of my life was very difficult. So I had to bring it on back into just for today. Just for right now, I don't have to use. Just for right now. And then I was left with this big hole. I just felt very empty. And people told me, well, that is where you're supposed to put a higher power. And I didn't want to have anything else be bigger than me. And I didn't believe in God. I didn't have a God that I liked, that I loved, or that I knew about. Because my father died when I was 8, and I spent most of my youth cussing God for taking my father away and making my life the way it was. So how was I supposed to pray to this? How was I supposed to come to believe that this could restore me to sanity? And what was wrong? Was I insane? What was the insanity about anyway? Only thing I knew is I had been on the 6th floor at Montgomery General. I guess that meant I was insane. That's the psych ward. So that's what I related to insanity. I was on a psych ward. So I went there for a little while. And I realized that, okay, I'm not on a psych ward anymore. Maybe I'm getting a little sane. And then I had somebody else tell me, well, you can borrow my higher power. And I said, I don't know about this. And then I had this really crazy man say, oh, it can be a light bulb. It can be a doorknob. It can be electricity. And I said, no, that's okay. But what I came to believe was that it was the power of, and we have a large group of people here, and it'll be even a larger group of people tonight. a huge amount of people, and you sit in that meeting tonight, I'm going to get a little choked up. Always get choked up over this. And you look at all those people, and if they used the way I used, and they're sitting in there tonight, and they're clean, oh my God. Is that a higher power? Just us in this room. Unbelievable. I carried knives. You know, if I was older, I probably would have carried guns. Could you see us in here now? Could you see Ocean City? They would not have enough police for us. The beer stores would just have glass broken out of them and everything. It'd be a mess. National Guard would be down here. So my first convention showed me the power, showed me my higher power. And then the third step said that I had to turn, that I had to make a decision to turn my will and my life over to the care of the God of my understanding. So there it was. It was the God of my understanding, y'all, and what you said. It was the care. You were just taking care of it. You weren't keeping it forever. You know, you were just watching over it and making sure I was doing the right thing as best you could. Because like my sponsor said, yes, I'll give you suggestions, but you'll do whatever you want anyway. So, you know, and I made the decision. And at first I thought it was like, I'm going to make a decision and some burning verse is going to show up and it's going to be a miracle. I really did. I smoked a lot of PCP. And I thought, like, you know, I was going to see stuff, and nothing happened. You know, I got down on my knees, and I'm praying, and, you know, and, well, what's up? Nothing happened. And then I realized that for me, because I'm very hard-headed, and I'm the kind of person that's got to beat my head against cinder block walls to, like, figure stuff out. I do everything the hard way. That I had to do this moment to moment, just like I did getting clean, just like I do praying, you know. And then once I got in the habit, I could let that period of time go further and further apart. Another thing I was told was I had to follow up that third step with an equally good fourth step. That was a part of turning my will over, was getting honest and writing it down. Getting honest and being fearless and writing it down. Writing down what I had done. The truth. You know, who I was. Just to know. And it didn't have to be all bad. And it didn't have to be all good. But it had to be all of it. It had to be all of it. Because our secrets will kill us. Our secrets will kill us. I used over my secrets. So why would I want to hold on to them? And that was very hard. I did a four step. I wrote it. And I wrote at the top. I've done a lot. And what I learned was I write at the top of my four steps, you know, keep the focus on me. It's not about Jane did this to me and, you know, I think she hurt me and that's why I went and stole stuff from her. You know, it's not about that. It's about me. It's about me. What was my part? What was my part? And then the fifth step, I had to share it with somebody else. And that was very scary. Because once again, I had to surrender and tell somebody else what I was about. And I didn't want anybody to know. I've never wanted anybody to know. I look a lot different than I used to, but I used to wear a lot of black and a lot of leather because it made me feel safe and secure. If I could have worn armor and been cool, I would have done that. You know, but leather was as close as I could get and look cool. I don't worry about cool anymore. My son pulls my hair out. But, you know, so it was very hard to share that fifth step, but I did it, you know, and I got on my knees with my sponsor and I prayed and then we shared and I found out that I was all right, that I wasn't as bad as I thought I was, you know, and I wasn't as good as I thought I was. I was just somebody. I was just a member of Narcotics Anonymous, you know. And I thought, once again, I heard people share, oh, it's going to be a great revelation, all this, you know, you're going to feel so relieved. And I'm sure a lot of people have. I didn't. I just felt like, okay, I've done this. Check it off the list, you know. Yeah. And I've done other ones since then, but it was an important thing for me to do. it was important to get it out. I call it a catharsis. It's a Greek word for a cleansing of the spirit and soul. And that's what I believe my fourth and fifth step are, a catharsis, a cleansing. And then the sixth step was that the defects of character, I have to look at it to make sure I'm good. We were entirely ready to have God remove all these defects of character. And once again, there's God. And I have to ask God to remove these things. And I have to get ready, become entirely ready. So I have to have this faith that God is going to be able to remove these things from me. And I can't do it. All I can do, what I learned from the sixth step, was all I can do is stop participating in the behaviors. You know what I mean? If I'm still out there stealing, God is not going to take the defect away. Yeah. It's not going to happen, you know? If I'm still gossiping and talking about Jane and what she's doing with Dick, then it's still going to happen. You know what I'm saying? It's not, you know, it's not going to come away. And that's another daily thing, you know. And for me, I've learned that it's about, sorry. I've learned that it's still about, you know, that sixth step. It's still about first we do it moment to moment. And then we can do it, you know, and spread it out a little bit, day to day, you know, week to week. But we always got these steps here for us to call back up on anytime we need them. You know, they're always there. You know, it is a program of action. This is what we do to live. The seventh step is we humbly ask Him to remove our shortcomings. Once again, I had a difficult time. Humble was not what I was. I didn't want to be humble. I'm very proud. I'm very egotistical. I'm very self-centered. But see, I had to be entirely ready to have those things removed before I could be able to ask. So I had to constantly just keep trying to be the best person I can be. And that's what I tried to do. I would just wake up in the attitude, I want to be the best person I can be today. And this is what I want to do. You know, I'm just going to focus on being the best person I can be and ask God to help me. God, please help me be the best person I can be today. Please help me be of service to God and others. And that's how it goes. The eighth step is we made a list of all persons we did harm, became willing to make amends to them all. I just took that right from my four-step list. I just took it right from there. And I would write a list of what I had done to those people. What was my part to that? For me, the ninth step was hard because I had to go up to people and talk to them. And it wasn't about saying I was sorry. Something I always stressed with my sponsees, because it was stressed to me, was, it's not going to make a bit of difference if I go and say I'm sorry. Okay. What matters is I've changed the behavior. That's what matters. And then 10, 11, 12, we continue to take personal inventory. I got 5 minutes. We'll do them fast. We continue to take personal inventory, and when we were wrong, promptly admitted it. That's pretty self-explanatory. Every night I try to look at myself and say, were you the best person you to be? What do you need to change, and who do you need to make amends to? And if I can do it during the day, I try to do it during the day. I had a couple of amends to make yesterday. I made them. You know what I mean? Right there. Because I can't live with that today. If I hold on to resentments, I will use. It doesn't hurt you. It hurts me. It hurts me. We sought through prayer and meditation to improve our conscious contact with God as we understood Him, praying only for knowledge of His will and the power to carry that out. All I know is that all I know for sure, because God does not speak to me. I told you I looked for that burning bush. It did not happen. I looked for that miracle after my fifth step. It didn't happen. I know that God doesn't want me to use. God wants me to be the best person I can be. And I believe I'm supposed to be of service to God and others. And I do that by practicing the 12th step on a daily basis. So I know when I'm mistaking my will for God's will, when I'm tense, when I'm telling people what to do, when I'm stressed out, and I'm not living in peace. Right. Something's up. But if I have an attitude of gratitude, you know, I'm living with acceptance in my life, it's going to be okay. Thanks for letting me share.
Thank you, Sarah. Then I'd like to introduce our second speaker, Thaddeus.
Good afternoon, everybody. My name is Thaddeus. I'm an addict. First thing I like to do is thank God for letting me be here. One of the things I did when I first came in the room, I was scanning the room to see how many people in here I knew. Because part of me, you know, it's real hard to get honest sometimes in a crowd of a lot of people. There's a lot of people in here that know me, and I thank God for the support of the people that's in here in this fellowship, and I thank God for the people who was here before I got here, the predecessors of the program, who are just as important as a newcomer. Because thank God for people who was here when I got here, and I heard them share their stories, and I heard them share their experiences. And I was blessed when I got here to have a sponsor early in recovery, because I was given a sponsor. And he told me, he said, Thaddeus, you got two options. You can just come in here and stop using if you want to. Or you can get to work and get into the steps. He said, because the reality, if you do not get busy, the same person will use again. Because once the drugs are gone, what are you left with? You're left with the same person. The same person that will connive, will cheat, will steal, will manipulate, and will do a whole lot of things. And that was real, real scary for me. It was one thing that I was walking up here with my literature. Somebody asked me, why do I have my book? And I said, I carry my works with me everywhere I go. You know, because I did when I was using, right? So it's really no different in here, because this is the program, right? And I was looking at the 12th step, what it says in here. I'm going to read this little passage that says, we each have a special, one-of-a-kind personality that is sure to attract many. Some of us have a sparkling sense of humor, which may reach someone in despair. Some of us are especially warm and compassionate, able to reach an addict who has rarely become the recipient of kindness. Some of us have a remarkable talent for telling the truth in no certain terms to an addict literally dying to hear it. Some of us are valuable assets to any service committee, while others do better working one-on-one with a suffering addict. I like to think that I have all these qualities. You know, there's a friend of mine that named Thomas P. from Baltimore talks about it's three people up here. Okay? It's how you want me to be. It's how I want me to be. And it's how God wants me to be. And I like to think that most of the time I'm the person that like God wants me to be. But in reality, I know that just ain't true. You know what I'm saying? I realize it's just not true. I'm a guy who come from Washington, D.C. I have a home group, 818 Miracles Group on Blaisdell Road. It's a step in the tradition meeting. I got here in 1995, February the 1st. And I came from a pretty good family. I had a lot of opportunities coming up. I didn't come from a dysfunctional family. I was taught good morals and valuables and principles. But it was a lot of things that was going on inside of me that I really didn't understand until I got here. And I was able to hear other people share honestly about where they was at. And that's one of the keys with the honest piece. And I understand that when I share honest, what I do, I help myself. And I might help somebody else who's sitting out there who struggles with get honest. Because I have levels of honesty. Let me get real. Some days I'm real, real honest. Some days I can't get honest at all. So it all is contingent on where I'm at spiritually on the inside, where I can get that day. I was coming out of the apartment that I work at. I'm a resident manager at a place, and one of the things that I have, I was always taught, Thaddeus, not only do you work on your defects, but you enhance your assets. I'm a person who speaks to a lot of people. That was something that I was taught to do when I was young. And I always understand, how could you say that you love God and you don't love people? Because God is in everybody. You know, and it's amazing how, man, we will walk past each other and just don't even open our mouth to say hello. So what I do that. Because early in recovery, what happened, I was in a program, and it was real funny. One of my ancestors, I'm very, very caring, and I speak, I have manners, and I was walking past this guy every day in the hall, and I would say, good morning. And he would look at me and keep walking, wouldn't say a word. So I said, okay, maybe he didn't hear me. So the next day I said, good morning. He looked right through me, didn't say a word. So now I'm starting to get feelings. You know, what's up with this guy? You know, so I told you early on in recovery, they gave me a sponsor. And thank God for the sponsor, because I told my sponsor, I told him what was happening. I would see this guy every morning in the hall. We would pass each other, and I would say, good morning. He wouldn't even speak. My sponsor just said, simply keep speaking. And I could not understand. Keep speaking? Why should I speak to this guy? He's not speaking to me. Just keep speaking, Thaddeus. That's who you are. Just keep speaking. So the next morning, I spoke to him. Good morning. He looked at me. Didn't say a word. I said, man, I'm not speaking to this guy no more. You know, keep speaking. Now, I forget that this guy is my sponsor, and I asked him to guide me through the program. Now, the humility part of the program is recognizing my assets and recognizing my liabilities, that I don't know everything. So if I ask somebody to guide me, then I have faith that what you're telling me is possibly going to work. So I said, I'm going to try one more time. So the next morning, I'm coming down the hall, and I see him coming. Okay? So he looks up, and our eyes meet, and he says, good morning. Now, what I learned from that scenario is when I do what I need to do, you understand, a lot of times we can help other people get out of their cells. Because I'm the kind of guy who will really take it personal. Don't speak to me. I'm gonna take it real personal. So I had to learn, and I'm still learning how to do that on a daily basis. My will versus God's will. I came out of my apartment building, and I made eye contact with a guy. It was, I think, a couple weeks ago. I'm coming down the steps, and I said, good morning. How you doing? And he looked at me. He said, I know you. I said, I don't think so. Well, what the fuck are you speaking to me for? So I said, all right, I give up. That's where he was at. That's where he was at. That's where he was at. You know. So I didn't feed it. I didn't feed it because I learned a long time ago the best way to disarm a person is not to say nothing at all. You know, when I first did the first third step with my sponsor, I was struggling with this thing, God's will versus my will. And he really broke it down real simple. Because that's what he had to do early on with me. He just gave me a real simple sample. He said, Thaddeus, so if you're coming down the street, man, and somebody curses at you, what you going to do? I'm probably going to curse at him back. He said, you think God would want you to do that? He said, you can always tell when you're doing God's will, because God's will is really hard to do. Your will is real easy. Make no mistake. You can tell when you're doing your will versus his. Because if you're anybody like me, boy, it's hard to do the right thing. Because I got two spirits in me. They're steadily pulling, a negative and a positive. And a lot of days, I just want to go there. I just want to touch it. That's all. Just let me touch it. Okay? And I know the consequences, but I still want to go there. Okay? Because I'm so used to doing that, man. You know, I am so used to doing that. I came out of Blockbusters one night, and I had, when you become entirely ready to have God remove all of the defects of character, my experience has shown what's going to happen. You're going to get bum rushed. Yeah. God said, you ready? We're going to see if you're ready. So you're going to be in situations that you're going to either go to the left or you're going to go to the right. I'm coming out of Blockbusters one night and going back to my car, and I'd ask God, please, to help me with this lust thing, because I'm a flirty guy. I like to flirt. Okay, and I recognize that because my friend says before you can recognize how honest you are, you need to recognize how dishonest you are. And I'm a very dishonest person because I'll tell a lie just like that. Okay? And flirting, I'll do that subtly. So when you flirt, what you're doing, you're sending a subtle message. And it's wrong if you're in a committed relationship because I can rationalize and justify. But I know right from wrong. So anyway, I'm coming out of Blockbusters, going back to my car, and this girl, she came up. She said, you got a dollar? And I looked at her, and I could tell she was one of us. She was a suffering addict that was still in active addiction. So I said, no, I don't have any money. So I went to turn. She said, please, you got a dollar? So I knew I had some money, and I don't want to pull out my bankroll, right? So I said, okay. So I'm putting my hand in there. I'm trying to peel in my pocket. You know how we do when we used to go to the man in the cop and you didn't want to pay all the money? So you would peel, and I'm trying to peel. But when I peel, a 20 pops out, and she sees the 20. And the first thing she said, oh, my goodness, $20, what I would do for that. And the disease said, boy, you can go there. You can go there. And I don't know what it does. And I know it's not me. I know it wasn't me. I know it wasn't me. I said, no, that's all right. Thank you. I said, here you go. Here you go, sister. Don't do that to yourself. And I walked on away. I did that day. Okay? I did that day. Okay? Because we're talking about defects that are only arrested. They don't go nowhere. And I'm telling you, it's depending on where I'm at spiritually. And if I'm not centered, then them no's don't come readily. Because I'm prone to say, yeah. Because if I can get away with it and think, don't nobody know, 9 times out of 10, I'll go. I've done it. I've done it. And my sponsor say, Thaddeus, think of the big picture, man. You got to think of the bigger picture because your mind is so small. You just touch this tunnel vision. You're looking at the feeling right there. You are going on the feeling. But is it worth it? Is the consequences worth it? And I'm talking about being in a relationship, being in a triangle. If anybody don't know what a triangle is, you're in a relationship with two women. One of them know you're in a relationship with one, but the other one don't know you're in a relationship with the other.
Yeah.
And I'm talking about in recovery. Because how I felt about myself on the inside. So I would try to get out of myself to get with somebody to make myself feel good on the inside. And I can remember a predecessor, someone who was here before me, sharing in a meeting. That you have to hit bottoms in recovery before you'll stop doing it. Just like I had to hit a bottom before I came in here. I had to hit a bottom in certain areas. I walked into a store down in D.C. and one of the part of me, I used to steal. Okay? I used to put on a suit and tie every day and go in the store with a briefcase. And I would steal. I would go all around. When people ask me where I work, I say, well, I work at Safeway. I work at Peoples. I work at Giant Food, you know. And this is what I did. And it was hard when I first got here not to do that. When I would go in the stores, I would shake because I was so used to picking something up and putting it in my pocket. Now we're talking about being in recovery because the literature talks about, man, if you continue to do what you do, you'll use again. So I'm walking in the store every day. I'm seeing the cashier and I'm buying stuff. And she's saying, good morning. I say, good morning. But what had happened, because of some things that I had stopped doing, I had gotten spiritually disconnected from the program. Now I'm going to meetings every day. I'm calling my sponsor. I'm not using, but I'm forgetting to pray. I'm forgetting that one thing. I'm forgetting to pray. I would wake up in the morning, jump up, man, be rushing, go to the bathroom, wash up, put my clothes on, and gone. Forgetting to pray. So what started to happen, I was walking in the stores. I was picking up Slim Jims.
Uh-huh.
Looking around, sticking them in my pocket. Petty. I need to tell you, I'm a petty thief, too. You know, I'm very petty. You know, so if I steal something small, you know I steal something big. I'm very, very petty. Little Slim Jim's got a pocket full of money. You know, walk around. And I leave out the store one day, and somebody taps me on the shoulder. In recovery, suit and tie on and everything. And I need to tell you about the humiliation. Because you'll get humbled real quick if you keep doing something contrary to the program. The bill is in the mail. They told me that, and I didn't believe it. And the guy said, you got something to belong to us. And see, I still will get in denial. And what's denial? Lying to myself. I know the man saw me take it because he didn't pat me on the shoulder, but I'm telling him I don't have nothing. He said, well, would you step to the back? And I walked through the store, and all the people looking at me. And I felt so low and got in the back and opened my coat, and I had 15 Slim Jims. You know, pocket full of money. God's will versus my will. And that's the area that I had to hit bottom in recovery. before it woke me up. And I didn't get a spiritual awakening, I got a rude awakening. You understand what I'm saying? People say, you can go to jail up in here and people don't care about you being clean. I walked into a store one day. I had been barred out of this store 7 years ago, forgot all about it. And I should have known because I've been barred out of just about every store in D.C. You know? But I'm clean. Don't you know I'm clean? I walk in the store with my suit and tie, the same guy's suit and tie you had on while I was stealing. You know? So they still got my picture on file. They still got it. You know? So I walk in the store and I'm ordering. I'm not stealing because I'm feeling good about myself. You know, I'm paying. I got money I'm paying for. And I'm standing there waiting and the manager come up to me. He said, sir. He said, leave the store. Leave the store? He said, yes, sir, leave the store. You've been barred from this store. I said, hold up, man. I said, barred? I said, man, I don't do that no more. He said, I don't care. You've been barred from the store. And for a minute, I wanted to buck. Until he said, told the security guard to call the police. Then I walked on out and left the store. You know, God's will versus my will. I recognize how my life has changed since I've gotten here. It's still a lot of things I need. It's a whole lot of work that has to be done in a whole lot of areas. One of the things the fifth step talks about, man, is admitting to God, to myself, and to another human being, the exact natures of my wrong. Now, I'm not ready to stand up here and do a full step up in this meeting here. Okay? I told you I got levels of honesty. And it talks about, man, admitting to God, because when I admit to God, I'm asking for forgiveness. When I admit to myself and read my full step, I'm getting the clarity. And when I admit it to another individual, that's the humility and the freedom of telling people what's really going on with me. And all I need is one person to tell up in here. I don't have to come in here and tell everybody. Because I have to get honest with me. Now, nobody up in this room. It's a lot of things I would love to share from this podium right now. But I recognize this. The ninth step says, man, if you're going to share something that's going to hurt somebody else, you need to keep your mouth shut. If it's going to hurt somebody at the expense of you sharing, it's going to hurt somebody else, you need not do it, Thaddeus. A lot of days, y'all, a lot of days I want to do right. A lot of days I want to do right, but it's a struggle. It's a struggle. And I'm talking about a guy who has done step work in the program. It's still a struggle sometimes not to tell a lie. It's something like you told me when I first got here, an addict would rather tell a lie and get cash than to tell a lie and get credit than tell the truth and get cash. And I didn't understand what that meant. And I'm in a meeting, man, 20 years later, because I was introduced to this program in the 70s. But I was young when I came here, and the people said, sit down, shut up. And if we want to know how to use, we'll call on you. And I said, man, this is not for me. So I rolled out. And when I came back, those same people were still here. And they said, welcome back. And I'm sitting in a meeting, and the topic was honesty. And it's something when they say, man, keep coming back, more will be revealed, don't leave 5 minutes before the miracle. And I'm sitting in a meeting 20 years later and it dawned on me what they were talking about. That when I tell the truth, I don't have to pay for it no more. The truth will set you free. But lies grow in the dark. I work part time. Let me get this straight. At a television station. Let me get this straight. I work sometimes, sometimes I don't. I work at a television station. I have two things I want to share with y'all about God's will versus my will. Some people in here have heard this story. And I share this for me, first of all, so I can get help. But I keep needing to hear this because some of the things are being revisited in my life again. And I share it for somebody else who might one day go through the same thing. Because that's what we share, our experience, strength, and hopes, not our opinions up in here, right? So what happened one day, I drive a limousine. And when I first got the job and they told me that you're going to be picking up all these famous people, and my ego came up and I said, oh, my goodness. And they said, well, I want you to go pick up Pam Grier at the airport. So I said, Pam Grier? Lord, oh, Foxy Brown? Good God Almighty. So I go in the bathroom, man, I'm in the front of the mirror, getting myself together because my primary purpose had gone out the window. My primary purpose was to drive But all of a sudden, I'm meeting Pam Grier, man. So when I'm in the airport and I see her coming off the plane, I ain't need no sign because I know what she look like. So when I see her coming, I walk up to her and I say, "Good morning, Miss Grier. My name is Thaddeus. I'm here from BET and I'll be your driver for the day." I said, if you want to get your bags, I'll go. She said, hold up, slow down. She said, what is your name? I said, Thaddeus. She said, okay. She said, well, Thaddeus, it's not Miss Grier, it's Pam. And I'll walk with you to the car. And she put her arms around me, and I said, oh, my God. Oh, Pam Grier, I'm walking through the airport, and I'm walking like this, man. Pam Grier. So I recognize, man, when the humility piece come out, what I'm doing, I'm easing God out. Y'all told me that when I first got here. So I need to stay in a level of humility at all times because I had forgot about my primary purpose. So what happened, the story, what happened, I picked up a famous person. And who it is not important, but the situation. Took her home. She lived not too far on the outskirts of Washington. I picked up from the airport. Real famous lady. Took her home, took the car back, and when I took it back, I went home, and the next day, my supervisor called me. So he said, Thaddeus. He said, did so-and-so leave a bag in the car? So I said, no, I didn't see a bag. And I really didn't see a bag. I didn't think no more about it. Went to work Monday, got the car, went and picked somebody else up, took them to the airport, dropped them off. And when I took the car back and went to clean it out, I looked in the back. It was a bag. Now, understand this. I'm an addict. But at some point in this program, when I come around here and stay around here long enough, I cannot continue to make excuses for my behavior. Especially when I know that I know better. So the first thought came to my mind, the people who was just in the car left the bag in the car. So I called the guy's office, the secretary said, no, he didn't have a bag like that. So I said, then it dawned on me, this must be the bag my supervisor had called me about Saturday. Now this is what I did. The first thing I did, I went and got the bag, and it was a little carry bag, the kids book bag to carry over their shoulders, and I opened the bag up. Yeah, because I'm very curious, I'm very nosy, because I want to know, okay? I want to know, and a lot of times, man, when you go looking for it, you just might find it. So I opened the bag up, man. The first very thing I saw in the bag was a brand spanking new camcorder. Still had the price tag on it. So I said, looked on through the bag, because I'm really curious now. Lady sweatsuit, a bag of potato chips, and all the way at the bottom of the bag was a little pouch with a zipper. So I said, I pulled it out and opened it up, unzipped it, and when I unzipped it, I dropped it and said, oh my goodness. It was 37 brand new $100 bills. And my Z said, you just been blessed. What it said, you've been blessed. God's will versus my will. You just been blessed, Thaddeus. Yes, sir, $3,700. You got enough money for a down payment on a new car. Because I only been here 2 years. I was driving an old car. You know, my image kicking up all my people. Everybody see got new cars. I want one. But as quick as it said that, something else said, that's not your money. But my disease said, but it's in your possession. That's right. That's what it said. That's what it said. Something else said, that is that stealing. My disease said, possession is 9/10 of the law. My conscience said, man, you can lose your job. Something said, tell them you didn't find it. And I sat there going back and forth, back and forth, what to do. And it's, man, it's crazy when you know what to do, but just don't want to do it. This is $3,700. If I had been using, it would have been no doubt what I would have done. But I'm not using. Doing the right thing is real hard. So I sat there, man. I'm going to tell y'all what happened to me while I sat there. Trust me. My heart started pounding real fast. Real fast. Palms of my hands started getting real wet. And my mouth started getting dry. And I was getting ready to use. Listen to me. I'm talking about a feeling. I ain't talking about running uptown copping no dope. I'm talking about a feeling. The same feeling I would have when I was cop. Couldn't wait to get home to get it in me. Bonds be breaking. I'd be sweating. This money was changing my mood. Thank God for people who had been here before me and I'd heard in the meetings, Thaddeus, come in here and get a God, man. You need to come in here and recognize. Recognize who got you here because one day the only thing going to stand between you and using is going to be God. So you need to call on him. My friend Greg used to always say, man, it's better to have him and not need him than to need him and not have him. I said, Lord, have mercy. He said that all the time. And I said, God, please tell me what to do. Please tell me, because I wanted to take the money. Make no mistake. Please tell me what to do. Because I know it's a bill if I take that money, but I was $3,700, y'all. And I sat there, man, and I put the money back in the pouch, and I started driving. And I wound up at her door. And I got out the car real slow. I sure did. And I'm saying, please don't be home. Please don't be home. Because I'm going to keep this money. I was going to keep it. I don't know who put me there back to her house, but I was going to keep this money. And I rang the doorbell, and her maid didn't answer the door. She opened the door. And when she opened the door, she looked at me and saw the bag in my hand. And the first thing she said, oh, you found my bag. I thought my nephew had left it on the airplane. My disease say, now don't you feel stupid. You's a stupid. Stupid. You done missed your blessing. And I felt the newcomers recognize when you go to a meeting and put your hand up in a meeting and share something, then you got to be ready for whatever comes back. Because a lot of times, man, some of us can be real vicious up in here. And I went to a meeting and shared what had happened, and a guy shared behind me, but he was really talking about himself. He wasn't talking about me. That's what he said. He said, man, $3,700. Boy, 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 you'll never get another blessing in your life. Damn fool. And a guy shared behind him, and he said, you know what? The third step talks about making a decision to turn our will and our life over to the care of God. Doing the right thing does not always feel good. You did the right thing. But I still didn't feel it. That was $3,700. Serious. So I got my sponsor that night, and I talked to him, and I told him what happened. I have a common sponsor. He just listened to me, man, and I was going on and on and on and on. He said, Thad, is you finished? I said, yeah. He said, well, look, let me run something past you. He said, number one, if you had kept the money, it would have been stealing. Cut and dry. It didn't belong to you. You couldn't have rationalized and justified it stealing. Number two, if you had kept the bag, you could have lost your job. Number three, the lady wasn't required to give you reward for something to belong to her. It was like body shots. I ain't want to hear this, man. You're right. Number four, if you had kept the bag, it would have been just like you using. You would have felt shame. You would have felt guilty. You couldn't have told nobody. And number five, if you hadn't opened the bag up, you wouldn't have gone through all this. I did it to myself. You know what I'm saying? All my life I have done it to myself, but wanted to point the fingers at other people for the position that I was in. Unhealthy choices and bad decisions have jackpotted me most of my life. So now I've been blessed with this blessed program that tells me, Thaddeus, you got to change up in here, man. Because I talked about, I know my friends say, man, it's easier to talk this thing than to walk this thing. You know what I'm saying? And most days I can talk it better than I can walk it. And I'm getting honest with you. Because sometimes, man, sometimes I just don't want to get to the exact nature of what's really, really, really going on with me, man. I never have. But I know as long as I keep coming back, my life will change. How many minutes is this here? I got. I just need to know because I want 5 minutes. Okay, I'm going to say this and I'm going to shut up. It's a guy works with me on my job, and I love him to death today. Today I do. I didn't love him to death 6 months ago. Okay? And I'm talking about me now. And I'm talking about how quickly I will look at you instead of looking at me when things happen. Because what did it happen? I had went into the supply room and took some hedge trimmers. Took them on my mother's house to trim her hedges. And while I'm trimming the hedges, it hit the fence and I broke the hedge trimmers. So the disease said, well, didn't nobody see you take them out of the supply room? Just take them back in there, put them back. But to show you how God works, my mother said, Thaddeus, you got a job. Matter of fact, you got two. Just take the same pair of hedge clippings, go to Home Depot and get the same pair. Real simple. So I did it. Got them, took them back. So when I'm taking the hedge trimmer back, I run into a guy that works with me while I'm going in the building. So when I see him, I tell him what happened. Just like I'm telling y'all. Put the hedge trimmers back. The next day it dawns on me I didn't finish the back. So I go get the hedge trimmers again. Take them on my mother's house, doing the back. I ain't break them this time. But I took them back, and when I'm taking them back, I run into the same guy again. So the first thing he said, Thaddeus, he said, your supervisor, he wants to see you in the office. So I told him, I said, okay. So I go put the hedge trimmers up and go. He said, Thaddeus, come on in, sit down, close the door. So I came in and sat down. He said, look, he says, the policy of this company that you don't borrow anything, any supplies to use for personal use, because we had problems in the past with that. Oh, yeah, by the way, I heard you borrowed the hedge trimmers yesterday and broke them. But I know you turned, I know you went and got a brand new pair and replaced them. So I'm saying, well, goddamn. How do you know that? Then it dawned on me who I told. So what happened? The first thing I got was a resentment. We got an IP family called the Triangle of Self-Obsession up in here. And it talks about three things that covers all our character defects: resentment, anger, and fear. We resent what happened in the past, we're angry about it right now, and we got fear of changing in the future. So what happened, he's talking to me, man, and I'm just resentment building up, and I don't hear nothing, because I'm saying, man, when I see this nigga, I'm going to step to him and ask him, why did you tell on me, man? What are you trying to get brownie points with the company? Hot, MF. That's where I went with it. But thank God for people in the program. Thank God for being open. Thank God for being able to come to meetings and hear other people share where they was at. That's the importance of going to meetings. So what happened when I left the office? Somebody saw me and my facial expression, they saw something was wrong. They said, what's up, Thaddeus? And I told him. He said, well, man, look, you don't have to do it, but my suggestion is, man, when you see him, don't say nothing. Don't say nothing, man. Say, don't say nothing, man. I got to tell this nigga. Man, why did you tell on me, man? So I called my sponsor. My sponsor said the same thing. Man, pray for the guy, man. Pray for him. So, man, I said, pray for him. All right. So I prayed for him. And you know, I don't have to say nothing to you, but I can have a body language, a posture that if you look at me, you can tell that I do not like you. Okay? And every day I would see him, man, I wanted to say something. I said, man, he's ha! But I'm praying. And I'm going to tell you what happened 30 days later, man. And I know it wasn't me. Because my sponsor gave me this IP pamphlet that we got called Self-Acceptance. And it talks about in that IP pamphlet that when I look at you, I look at me. Anything I see you do, I'm capable of doing the same thing myself. So if I'm a child of God, you got to be a child of God. So I got faults, you got faults. So what started to happen, I started seeing him different. It was a subtle change. I started looking at him, that's just who he is. But I recognize who he is, so the next time, I don't take nothing and do what I did. Because if I didn't do what I did, I wouldn't have gotten that. But I wanted to point the finger at him. And I love him today. Because he helped me look at me. And it's a shame when somebody else, man, can dictate how you feel. If you give them that much power. You know how I used to say, man? You know how I used to say, you made me mad? I think that's God saying that I better shut up. But look, I want to thank the committee. I want to thank everybody. Thank you for letting me share.
We'd like to thank both of the speakers for very good messages. At this time, we're going to open the meeting up to those who would like to share. Please remember to come to the microphone one at a time. Also, try to keep in mind that there are other addicts who are waiting to share. If you don't want to be recorded, please inform the person taping that they can turn off the record so that they can turn off the recorder while you are sharing. Could I have someone read just for the day before we start? Did we do that right? Before we open the meeting up.
Sure.
I'm an addict named AJ.
AJ.
Just for today, tell yourself, just for today, my thoughts will be on my recovery, living and enjoying life without the use of drugs.
Tell yourself.
Just for today, I will have faith in someone in NA who believes.